All right, folks, we're back. The latest Mountain West Football, Mountain West Wire, MWR.com podcast. That's a lot of Mountain West wires in there, Matt. But we're back. Week 13 recap. And stuff happened, right? We had a few football games that need to be discussed, I believe, right?
Very interesting weekend overall.
There's a lot of crazy football. Friday, Saturday, coaching stuff, not coaching stuff. Hosting, not hosting. We'll get to it all, but if you like us on Facebook, we appreciate it. We want to build that up, Mountain West Wire over there, MWC Wire on Twitter. We got a ton of interaction today. We're increasing followers, people come into our website, but I like how Matt posts. I know you post this every day because you're up earlier than me, but give your reaction in gift form. That was highly popular Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I figure it's a nice little thought exercise, and some of the responses are actually pretty hilarious most of the time, so...
My favorite one came from a Wyoming fan. Did you see that one?
Oh, where he lit his own beard on fire and stuff like that?
Oh, no, I missed that one. No, the guy who on a bicycle just runs him over in the nuts.
Oh.
that was my favorite, I think.
Yikes.
There are some good ones, but it's there's the fire one. There's a lot of stuff going on. But, yeah, if you basically it's like give us your reaction gift form, and you are probably, before we knew hosting duties, we're pretty happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get to the game. Let's start Friday night. So we had I'm going to talk a little
bit. Friday afternoon.
Oh, sorry. Actually. Friday afternoon. Yes, I was watching this in my hotel room because I was sort of out of town. Caught a good portion of this game. Let's just say this. Rashard Penny is good. And did you happen to see – well, really quick. Stanford. We'll get to my Stanford tweet I mentioned earlier that I saw. Aztecs win 35-10. Lobos actually kept it pretty close for about half of this game. However, you could tell the difference in the game that's coming when the end of the first half, Aztecs had the ball deep in their own territory. It was only 7-0, so Lobo's defense is actually doing pretty good, holding Penny somewhat in check. And the good old penalties and Lobo's defense comes to bite him in the butt, where there was a the wrong drive chart here, but they get the ball at the 19-yard line. They're on 19. And there's, 4 minutes left? Like, maybe they could do something, maybe not. They're going down there. Oh, 3rd and 19. Oh, jeez. Aztecs can't pass the ball, can they, Matt? They're not very good at passing.
It's not quite what they're known for all the time.
We'll do that. So Penny, they're like 3rd and 19. Well, we'll just run the ball, punt it. We'll see what happens. Penny gets a pretty good run, 13-yard run. Oh, penalty on SDSU, 5-yard penalty. Wait a minute. Personal foul on the Lobos. So instead of it being... basically, either 3rd and 24 or 4th and 6 in punting for the Aztecs, automatic first down. I like how they put the 0-yard line. Do you notice that too, Matt?
On the yeah, I chart. Do.
But they get a penalty. It's like, okay, whatever. That's okay, that stinks. 1st and 10 at the 20. So it's not like the ball moved very far, but new set of downs. Okay, first down, 20-yard pass. First down again, 2nd and 1, first down. And then, oh, it's 3rd and 3 at the 20. Oh, they score a touchdown. Basically, Penny goes untouched and kind of slowed down about the 5-yard line to walk it in.
Yeah.
From that point, I'm like, okay, this game's over. 14-0, nothing's going to happen. That's the epitome of this Lobos defense here.
Well, I think the other thing that really stood out to me in this game, because, I mean, you're right, it did get a little bit away from them, you know, late in the second quarter, early in the third quarter, when they were, down 21-0 before they finally got some momentum going.
Yeah, the next possession, Penny goes 51 yards out, untouched. Who goes untouched from 50 yards out?
So what stood out to me was that, you know, within that same stretch, you know, from this time they're down 14-0 to the time they're down 21-0 and trying to come back, it seemed to me like, you know, they were taking shots down the field, and especially once Tavaka Tuioti, who finished 10 of 20 for 156 yards and a touchdown.
Robos.
Two interceptions. So, you know, obviously they were trying to throw to get back into the game, which almost by necessity. And they were throwing down the field, and a lot, you know, more than a few times, they weren't really missing those passes by much. And some of that was, you know, owed to the fact that San Diego State secondary is playing great defense altogether. Like I counted, like they're credited with 7 pass breakups, but it seemed like, you know, every time New Mexico was throwing the ball down the field, you know, I think there was one pass in particular where I'm trying to remember, I think it was Patrick Reed. It would have been like a 30 or 40 yard completion, and he had it. And then whoever was covering him, I believe it was Tariq Thompson, knocked it away at the last minute. So, you know, they were going for these chunk plays, which, you know, obviously when you're down two or three scores is the right move. You can't always, you know, go laterally. And, you know, I think they were doing what they needed to do. They were coming up just a little bit short, you know, and some of that credit is, you know, goes to the guys who were back there doing a lot of the coverage. Cameron Kelly had a really great game. You know, it won't show up on the stat sheet. He's only credited with three tackles and everything like that, but he had a great game. You know, Tariq Thompson, probably All-American freshman, right?
I think so. It's fair to say.
Two interceptions. I believe I saw a note from the information director down there at SDSU where he's the first freshman this year to have two interceptions in a game.
Wouldn't be surprising. Not many do.
I'm probably misquoting that. But, you know, as a unit, they played extremely well. And New Mexico is, you know, doing what they needed to do to try and get back in the game. And to their credit, it did work a little bit. They did have the long catch and run from Jay Griffin. That was actually a pretty good play, mm-hmm. all things considered. You know, broke a tackle and then basically crossed the field to get to the end zone.
But they couldn't run the ball. That was the problem. They had zero running game, and that's the reason they lost. They got to be able to run the ball. They had nothing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just Owens, 27 yards. Like, look at – and you mentioned those pass breakups. They had six TFLs. Like, who do you have? What's his name here? I can never say it right. Kaivah Tizino? Tizino, sorry. 2.5 TFLs, what, 14 tackles? Jeez, everybody was 7 solo. There were 6 TFLs. They Lobos just couldn't get anything done. So, like you said, they had to throw the ball. And if you're down that many scores in your team that can't really throw efficiently or that's not what you want to do, that's what I said. When it was 14-0 and noticed their rushing yards at halftime, there was no way they were coming back in this game. They attempted to, but it's end of the season. It's a tough loss, but Aztec's defense is really good. And Penny, 200 yards, that 51-yard long one, 2 TDs. And then also, what would you want to say right now? Juwan Washington has 2,000 yards next year.
Ooh. I mean, it's really hard to say that any running back is a shoe-in for 2,000 yards, but, I mean, you consider the guys they have coming back. I'm pretty sure the entire offensive line is returning. You know, there were, what, 3 freshmen along the starting unit this year. I think, I'm trying to remember his name. I'm not seeing him in the starting lineup. This Rosales, I think.
It's been young, the guy from
SDSU. I think he's going to be a senior next year. He didn't. Yeah, but you know the guys that tackle in particular, Keith Ishmael, Tyler Romer. I think both of those guys are redshirt freshmen, and I think you know they did have some issues pass protecting again a little bit. You know, because New Mexico did manage 3 sacks, which I think is worth noting. Mm-hmm. That's been a little bit of an issue. You know, throughout the season, being able to protect Christian Chapman, who, again, on the whole, had a pretty solid afternoon, 14 of 21, 198 yards at 2 scores.
Yeah.
But, you know, offensive lines that, you know, stay together can be very, very dangerous things in the long run. So I think if you're an Aztecs fan, you know, yeah, there's some wrinkles to iron out going forward to the bowl game, going forward to 2018. But, you know, I don't think anybody's arguing that they're not going to be in the mix again next year. And, you know, as far as your original question, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I almost have to hedge, but, you know, the way that this offense has been cranking out 2,000-yard rushers recently, it wouldn't surprise me if Washington were the next guy to do that.
Yeah, just a quick note. Like, I don't know if this is any sort of record or not, but, yeah, Penny this year, I don't know what the it's probably few and far between the consecutive 2,000-yard rushers by a single school. You had Penny this year. You had Pumphrey last year. I don't know how many schools going back-to-back. Like, Stanford could have been close, but they had Christian McCaffrey, but not Bryce Love last year. Or McCaffrey, his senior, excuse me. But, like, it is rare, obviously, because they had, like, it's basically, like, at most, like, 2 or 3 guys each year max. They get 2,000 yards. You have 2 every year going back to, like, 2013. 2013 is the last year. There's only 1 2,000-yard rusher, in Andre Williams from Boston College, who just tore it up. There's 0 in 2012, so I know I'm exaggerating. And there might be, I guess, bowl stats and extra games. So there should be another one this year because Bryce Love's at 1,848 and Jonathan Taylor's at 1,806. And Taylor could have as many as 3 games if the playoff goes their way. So there could be a couple more guys in there, but not very many. But then one thing I'd like to note, Stanford football. San Diego State beat Stanford, right? Am I correct on that?
You are correct.
Even though Bryce Love, yes, outdrew him that night, but they put a tweet out. I should have had it looking up here while you're talking before, but basically putting Penny, or not Penny, Love, number one in total yards, number one in touchdowns, number one in this. Big fat asterisks. Power five teams only. It's like, really? He does not have more rushing yards than Rashard Penny. He does not have more touchdowns than Rashard Penny. Or Devin Singletary, FAU, who has 26 touchdowns. His yards per attempt is better than Penny, so you got to give him that. Yards per game, Penny gets them by 0.92. So, again, how is he not a Doak Walker finalist?
See, you know what it reminds me of? Like, have you seen Friday Night Lights, the movie?
One time, I believe. So help me refresh my memory about, was it Boobie Johnson? Okay. Is that the guy?
Well, okay, so there's a scene after Boobie Miles injures his knee where he goes to Midland to get his x-rays checked out. Mm-hmm. And he's convinced that the doctor is, like, against him simply because he's from Midland.
Yeah,
and so he starts screaming at the guy. He starts screaming at the guy, who's paying you? And that's kind of what this whole Rashard Penny not being a Doak Walker finalist kind of reminds me of. Because the season that he's had is like such a slam dunk for that kind of award that it kind of makes me wonder if we could create like some kind of award ourselves and just give it to him. You know what I mean?
We should. We should fax him an award and make it for, because people were, we didn't discuss this much last time. Did it come out before last podcast or is it this week afterwards? I forget.
I don't recall.
People calling the Joke Walker Award. It is ridiculous. Like, some guy was on Twitter, select the all-purpose yard award, because I kind of mentioned, like, all-purpose on our Twitter. I go, oh, what about touchdowns? What about yards per play? What about total yards? What about rushing yards? What about this, or this that's only rushing? And part of it is, like, it isn't the SMU. Somebody tweeted, was it you or somebody tweeted out about how you can get a table at the Doak Walker Award?
Oh, yeah, it's like, all about money.
Yeah, it's like you can buy a table if you're going to get this too. I get what it's for. It's a great cause and everything what it does, but you can buy tables or buy whatever. But like the candidates, who are the finalists? It's Jonathan Taylor. You have Saquon Barkley and Bryce Love, right? Are those the finalists?
Yes, they are.
It's like, even if you want to give the competition route, which doesn't hold too much because I know the West isn't very good, but they also played Stanford, Arizona State. That's a pretty good team. They played Boise State's good defense, Fresno State. I know the two games Penny didn't play well in Boise and Fresno, but overall, like, pretty good competition. But like yards, he leads every category. It's not like you're looking at, okay, not to point out Devin Singletary. He's doing very good things for FAU. Competition not as great, which I know I just mentioned that, but he has 26 touchdowns. Everything else is a couple hundred yards behind everybody else. Like, mm-hmm. He's a couple hundred behind Love, behind Taylor. However, I don't see, where's Barkley on this total yards list? Is he, like, down on the list? I gotta scroll a little bit here, don't I, to find him? No, I'm serious. I'm not just making that. I'm like, Penn State, he just has 1,100 rushing yards. How is he a finalist?
Money.
No, but, like, that's my point. Okay, honestly, the other two guys, Love and Taylor, well-deserved. But how does Barkley get there with 1,100 rushing yards? 1,100, that's 31st in the country.
And Penn State's not even going to the playoff.
No,
so.
It's like, it's ridiculous. I know they're announced last week, but even that's like, that just doesn't make any sense. It is money because you can pay to get there. But like, if he's not a Heisman finalist, like, he's not going to win because it's probably Baker Mayfield. But this is like on par of like, was Marshall Faulk a finalist? Yeah, he was a finalist but didn't win. But it's like, it's just ridiculous. Like, going to a Doak Walker Awards website, you can go to like stats, like rushing yards, weekly rushing leaders. Rushing leaders per game, Barkley's like down the list of them. I think they did the ESPN route where they included 11 just to include Barkley for rushing yards per game. Because wasn't
see
he's number 11.
You know what should have disqualified Saquon Barkley?
What?
14 carries, 35 yards against Rutgers.
Oh! What was the score in that game? Do you have that in front of you real quick?
Oh, they won 35-6.
So it wasn't like a 60-0 drubbing where he came out at halftime.
And he had two touchdowns, but he had 35 yards against Rutgers.
At least Boise State and Fresno State have a pretty good defense, right?
Yes.
And so like people say, well, he rushed 56 yards against Boise. I'm like, well, that's not great, but...
Well, guess what? Barkley did the same thing against Indiana. Yeah. Anyway.
And one last thing.
Here's another question before we move on.
Okay.
Are you okay with the fact that the Aztecs are ranked again?
Oh, that's a good point. They are ranked above Fresno or in one poll and Boise. I don't know. They've lost their two biggest games on the schedule. They lost. I guess Fresno went to
the top. They lost their two biggest games on the conference schedule.
Conference schedule. Yeah. That's, well, yeah. No, I would say Fresno should be ranked ahead of them in the Coaches Bowl.
Because I feel like both of those teams, and I said this on Twitter earlier, both of those teams probably should be ranked at this point. We'll talk about Fresno a little bit later.
You know who should not be ranked? Mississippi State.
You know who else shouldn't be ranked? South Florida.
Are they ranked? Oh, yeah, they're.
They're still number 22 in the AP poll. And do you realize that they haven't beaten anybody over 500 this year?
Nobody? Who's their best win?
Their best win is Temple.
And they have what, 5-6?
They're 6-6.
Oh boy, hey, bowl eligible. Give it a hands up. Give it a hand up. Hey, but
that's literally their best win. And I think what people overlook when they're looking at San Diego State versus Fresno State especially, let's not forget that, you know, the non-conference wins that the Aztecs had this September have held up about as well as you could hope for if you're an Aztecs fan at this point. Like Stanford's in the top 15.
Particularly Arizona State as well. You know what I mean? They are supposed to be bottom feeder in the Pac-12 South.
And they have, and Stanford has a chance to win the Pac-12 title next weekend, this Friday,
they
actually.
They crushed Notre Dame. They beat them pretty easily.
You know, and Arizona State was picked to finish last. I believe somebody mentioned that they had actually finished second in the Pac-12 South.
Yeah.
So, you know, that win. And then, of course, you have an 8-win Northern Illinois team that turned out to be a pretty solid MAC team. And you can't lose sight of those things.
Those wins are possibly the best non-conference win of any team in the group of five.
Oh, yeah. The Stanford win is the best win that any team had in non-conference play. You know, Fresno obviously has the win over Boise. Mm-hmm. Boise has their win over San Diego State. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Boise were like 30 or something like that, you know, also receiving votes or thereabouts.
They are.
But, I mean, at this point, considering the entire resume, the Aztecs and the Bulldogs should both be ranked.
Who should be ranked higher, Fresno?
I mean, if it were me, I would probably have the Aztecs a little bit higher.
Like one or two spot difference at most, like 23, 25, something like that.
Because I think that San Diego State's two best wins, you know, taken together, and I'm thinking, you know, that's Stanford and I guess Arizona State, slightly better.
Really quick.
Than Boise and San Diego State.
Arizona State, here's the weird thing. Arizona State's 76 in S&P Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's not updated yet.
So, I mean,
they're not a bad
Pac-12 team.
No.
But, you know, obviously, I mean, you could probably rank them, you know, 24, 25, 23, 24, and I wouldn't have a problem either way. But I think we should all start wondering aloud why South Florida is still ranked and just go from there.
They almost beat Central Florida.
Almost.
Yeah.
Only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
And they should have won, if not for special teams miscues.
And also, if their defense didn't give up 49 points.
Well, that too. Yeah.
Anyway.
You know what all this is leading up to again?
I don't.
6-6 Texas, ranked 18th next year in a preseason bowl.
Oh, let's not talk about that. I'm going to get so angry about that.
What about Tennessee? Are they going to be ranked again?
No, I hope not.
All right, let's. One last thing I was going to note real quick. The Stanford put Penny has the most 100-yard rushing yard games near. Not true. Or Bryce Love. Penny has 11. Love has 10. So there's that.
All right.
Penny for Heisman, right?
Exactly.
If he's not a finalist, let me ask you this. And who's your Heisman finalist really quick? Do you want to spit that out real quick? Do you care to? Does it matter?
I mean, Penny's one. I would put Mayfield in that conversation for sure. Mm-hmm. I'd have to think about the rest. Bryce Love definitely deserves to be there.
Mason Rudolph, maybe?
I don't know.
I think Lamar Jackson should be there again. He has better numbers than last year.
Yeah, I mean, if you ignore the wins and losses the Louisville's put up this year, his numbers have been better than last year's for sure. And then, I mean, those four, I think, are probably the most deserving. You know, if I really wanted to throw a bone to someone else in the group of five, I would also put Mackenzie Milton in there too, because he's been probably the best group of five quarterback in the country. And, you know, we've talked about hashtag American power in the past, but, you know, Mayfield's number one as far as quarterback rating, Milton's number two.
Yeah.
And I think that should definitely be worth something.
There's that. And one thing real quick, I was watching the UCF-USF game on ESPN3. They're running power six the whole time during those local spots. That's all they're running. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like, God, jeez. There's like five or six guys that should be in there. Barkley should not be in there at all. It's a joke. Rudolph, maybe, it's because numbers. I don't know. You know who's not going to be a finalist, but is just tearing it up, apparently? I just realized I went by total touchdowns. I can give you 100 guesses. You never guessed who has this. Touchdown leader passing, Drew Locke, Missouri. 43 touchdown passes.
They have been a very good second half team this year.
Yeah, went 5-6 to be bowl eligible with Barry Odom. Good for them.
Good for them.
All right, let's move on. We've talked way too much about nonsense, but it's okay. It's fine.
All right, let's talk about the Fremont Cannon then.
You know what you don't do in the Fremont Cannon? Have a defensive end guard a wide receiver. That's what you don't do.
Who? Yeah, probably not ideal.
Who is UNLV's defensive coordinator to make that call? How does that happen?
And I mean, have you seen like any of the local coverage since then, like the columns that they've written in the local newspapers
a little bit
in the last day or two?
Sort of. I've been doing a few other things, not as much as I wanted to. What's the word?
I mean, Vegas is, you know, at least as far as the columnists down there are concerned, Vegas is burning, man. They are fired up about the fact that UNLV gave this game away.
Did they give it away though?
Well, I think you could probably make a stronger argument that Nevada just went out and won it. You know, they dominated on the stat sheet pretty much everywhere you look.
Barely. Come on. Rushing yards was subpar against a Nevada rushing defense that's been pretty bad all year. They go well under their yards per play, yards per game, everything. Like, Nevada outpatched them, and so I don't see any dominated in the stat sheet, really. They couldn't run the ball very well.
Okay, so here's what I'm looking at. You know, obviously, yeah, UNLV's had troubles stopping the run this year, but when you consider the inconsistencies that Nevada has had, you know, if you look at what Kelton Moore did, for instance, 23 carries, 109 yards, 4.7 yards per carry. He didn't have that many big runs. I'm trying to look up exactly how many. He only had one run.
That 16-yarder.
That 16-yarder. So, you know, you could say he was fairly steady throughout. Like, you know, they didn't really push him backwards all that much because UNLV was only credited with, well, actually, I guess they had 7 tackles for loss. But, you know, the running game was steady, if not exactly kind of like the game-breaking kind of running game you see elsewhere in the conference. So I think that that's, you know, a mild success for them. But, I mean, if mm-hmm. you look at what the Wolfpack were able to do yards per play, you know, Wolfpack was at 6.5. UNLV was at 4.4. And when you're moving the ball, you know, especially in chunks through the air like Ganji was able to do, you know, they didn't have a very explosive running game, but Ganji came out and maybe had his best game overall this year. 24 of 33, 266 yards. But more importantly, like, he was exploiting the secondary in a way that I think that we've seen him do a lot down the stretch these days. And, you know, they keep track of the 15-yard chunk plays, but, I mean, you just go down the stat sheet, you know, very first play, 42-yard completion to McLean Mannix, you know. And then, you know, 21 yards, 28 yards. So it wasn't as though they were just barely getting those chunk plays. You know, they were making hay pretty much all game long through the air. And so I think that is a credit to them and really, you know, kind of putting this game away.
Well, there is. And, like, I'm looking through, like, I watched a bit of this here and there. But it's like saying UNLV gave it away. It's like their biggest lead was only 7 points, man. You telling me that's how you give it away? It's like they had a chance, like when they go for that one position where they had 4th-and-1 to 9, yeah, give it to Lexington Thomas. You think that's a sure thing? That's probably where that killed them. They could have kicked a field goal, been 19-9, but then they don't get that first down. Then Nevada goes down and goes 91 yards or 90 yards, whatever it was, for a touchdown to tie the game. That was pretty much it. And like after that, UNLV's offense did nothing. They had punt, three and outs. The defense held up, three and out again. then Nevada gets a TD. Then they go deep down to try to win the game, but fourth and two at the 22, can't get it. And that's the end of the ballgame. So I don't think if they're staying, UNLV gave it away. That's not the case at all. It's like they both turned the ball over a couple times. Neither scored off of their outside of the field goal off the Nevada fumble. They didn't really score off turnovers. Like, overall, it's like the yards per play was reasonably even. A little bit of edge penalties weren't really there. I would say, like, even third down conversion, 9 of 18, 6 of 12. That was Nevada in the latter. But they both were, like, this is a, like, I think it's a comparable game, really, if you think about it.
Well, I think one thing that made a difference, possibly, is, you know, Nevada was a little more successful on first downs. So that really put more pressure on UNLV in the long run. Because, yeah, they both completed 50% of their third downs. And if you really get into the numbers, like, they're just about even in those kinds of things. Like, their average down and distance was roughly the same. You know, their effectiveness running the ball was about the same, especially for UNLV. They had seven different first downs converted on the ground. But, you know, Nevada had a lot more success on first downs that I think might have made a difference in this game because, you know, again, if you look at yards per play, you know, Nevada was averaging 8 yards on first down. So they were moving the chains, I think, a little more often and putting more pressure on this defense than UNLV was if you look at what UNLV was doing on offense, rather.
You know what else is a big difference in this game? There's two reasons they should beat themselves up over it. Don't lose to Howard in week one. You go to a bowl game. Clearly.
Yeah.
And how many field goals did UNLV kick in this game again?
Two.
There you go. You kick field goals. No, three field goals, actually. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at red zone field goals.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's even worse. Yeah, the 53-yarder is huge, but two red zone field goals? Come on. There's been so many times this year, going back to Howard, even when they beat Fresno State, they were settling for field goals when they get in the red zone and getting deep. So that's where you kind of put the blame on this. You get in the red zone twice and get no touchdowns, or get, just, I don't know the other score, but you have two field goals in the red zone. It's get touchdowns. This has been UNLV's problem the whole year. They get close, they settle for field goals. That's the difference games this year. And so that's why, it's like, again, first beat Howard, but field goals, man. It's like, come on, you get that close, fourth and one. And then fourth and one was in the red zone, and they don't score again. So that's six points in those, at least those three trips. I know there's more, but fourth and one at the 9, that could have been a field goal. It flipped to a 10-point swing. There's a couple times where they get close and they can't convert, and that's been an issue all year long.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if for all the successes that UNLV has, and I think both of these teams in the long run, you know, going into 2018, I think both of these things are going to be, you know, real big headaches for the contenders in the conference. But that might be kind of the biggest what if, because if you look at the numbers on the season, you know, if you look at red zone conversions as a whole, they ended up finishing sixth in the conference, which is pretty good. So they managed to get something on 86% of drives.
One more thing. I just noticed this now. Both of their turnovers inside the red zone.
Yeah.
Come on.
That'll hurt you every time.
I get how they say they give it up, but it's like, come on, you can't. It's whatever. It's like the old San Jose State joke a couple years ago. They get close to red zone and nothing happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to add that, you know, they got something on 86% of drives, so middle of the pack, which is good. Mm-hmm. But as far as scoring touchdowns is concerned, they only did that 54% of the time. And that was 10th in the conference. And that's one of those things where, like you say, you know, it's something to try to figure out going into next year, but it'll be the kind of thing that haunts them all off season long.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Sanchez was saying about after the game. Like, and now we have to wait till September to see what happens. And Dave, guys, coming back, we'll get off season stuff down the road, talking about each team or most of the teams in a couple shows in January, February, that sort of stuff. But when you look at it, they have young teams, young players coming back who, like Armani Rogers, clearly. The running backs are coming back. Offensive line. Like, losing only, like, Devontae Boyd's, like, the real big name they're losing on offense. They bring a lot of guys back. So, they, like, we mentioned a couple weeks ago, I think, when me and Brandon were doing a show, they've been so close in so many games. They could have, like, 8 or 9 wins on the year. But it's kind of like Utah State last year. They were close, but couldn't get it done. Either blew leads or had close losses. So, should we move on to the next game? Do we go to the Boise Fresno game now, or should we save that to the end?
No, let's do it now.
Fresno State 28, Boise State 17, and Do you think Boise did trick plays just to screw with Jeff Tedford a little bit for next week?
I don't think so. I mean,
or was that, let me rephrase it, was that their goal to attempt to, maybe?
I mean, I think maybe they wanted to figure out how to get the defense on their heels, because, and especially when you consider the flea flicker, I believe it was, what, on the first drive of the game
early,
that they had?
Very early.
Yeah, I, for those who don't know, I was at this game, and, you know, it was super fun to watch live. So, I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, they probably figured they needed to do something to get this defense on its heels. I kind of anticipated it would be a defense-friendly game. And I mean, in that particular instance, I don't think I was disappointed, because when you look at what they were doing, especially through three quarters, it was basically even all across the board through three quarters. And, you know, that shows up on, you know, the scoreboard, where Fresno State was only up 19-17 going into the fourth quarter. But I mean, even through down the line, through three quarters, you know, Boise was averaging 3.5 yards per carry. Fresno State was only averaging 3.2. Both quarterbacks were doing really well through three quarters. You know, Brett Rippon was, or in Montel Cozart, were combined 19 of 25, 240 yards. McMarion had 244 yards of his own. What was really interesting to me was, like, you know, they figured out pretty quickly, I think, that they weren't going to be able to run the ball especially easily.
Either team.
In this matchup.
Either team could do that.
But, I mean, especially for Boise, you know, they needed to figure out how to throw to win. And at least the way that I saw it, there weren't a lot of really easy catch and runs in this game. Like, you know, obviously, you know, Rippon was 22 of 31 on his own, 278 yards, you know, no touchdowns, no interceptions. So that, I think, is a positive that they didn't turn the ball over against the secondary at all. But it seemed like, you know, nearly every play was tightly contested. Like, Cedric Wilson ended up having a really big game, 7 catches, 134 yards. But, you know, there was, you know, one catch that probably should have been picked off on the sidelines. It was, you know, off of Jaren Bryant's hands and, like, right into a Wilson who was falling away into the sideline. There was, you know, another catch where he had a defender on him and he just managed to get both of his feet down inbounds and things like that.
There were a lot of good catches in this game. There are so many good catches.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that that's a testament to how well Boise's receivers played, but it was also, I think, a credit to, you know, the tight coverage that Fresno was playing pretty much all afternoon long. And so it was, to me, it was fairly even, a fairly back and forth affair until McMarion had that long touchdown. And that is when I think the tenor of the game changed, because then all of a sudden, you know, Boise had just battled back to make it a one score game. You know, one play later, you're back down two scores. And I don't think they really ever recovered after that.
It's not. That's also the issue. Like, I'll say it, even when they had success switching quarterbacks, I know Cozart didn't play a ton, but he ran the ball a little bit. He had that one wide open touchdown pass that was a 9-yarder. That's the guy snuck behind the back of the secondary. But for it, just when you're playing against a good defense like this, and you have to come out and you're throwing the ball, and like I said, coverage was tight both sides. Like, Wilson made great plays. Keyshawn Johnson made great plays. A lot of good catches and tight coverage on both sides. But if you had to come out of a game and you're playing, Rippon played very well overall, but if you had to come on the bench for a little bit, it's like, it's any momentum you have, it's like it's done. I know it's worked fairly well switching quarterbacks back and forth, and I know Rippon has had the majority of the snaps, but yeah, stick with the guy. And there's, I think that's right, that one touchdown, that was what it did. Like, that long one, it's the one play, get him up by two. Boise has to punt the next play, and that's it, man. It's like you're up 20, or not, excuse me, not up to, sorry, touchdown made it to 26-17. But this was a game where it's like defense won, except for those couple big plays. Boise missed a field goal. That was a big deal. But like, looking at some of their drives, like, three plays, five plays, they had quite a few drives that were short in this game. Like, they didn't have overly abundant of long drives, and like possessions, there weren't a lot of possessions either in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think Fresno was more physical at times than Boise State, and they kind of beat them. Like, Boise's kind of known for their defense for the most part, even though most people think their offense, Fresno's defense is really good. And Madison had a poor game. They could, Cozart usually breaks off a big run, couldn't get anything done, and a couple missed chances for Boise. Missed field goal in the first quarter. And then they had that long 10-play drive when it was tied 7-7. They couldn't get 1 yard. When they did the – why did they – that was the worst play – like, I don't want to say it's the worst play call ever, but fourth and one, your formation gave away the play because it was an off, right? Because offset running back, like they had the tight bunch, I think one, maybe two receivers, and one guy came in motion, so maybe they're going to do a sweep or a handoff right there, or he'll be a block to the running back, but why not go the I formation? Because when it's off back with off center, the running back is off to his left, and there's nobody directly behind him at all, it's a QB sneak a mile away. It's like, if you're going to run the QB sneak, fine. Give an I formation. Give the threat of you're going to actually give the ball to your running back. And that was a big play. Who knows if they had scored? They could have kicked a field goal from there, so that's maybe 6 points they missed out on. But that was just a weird situation. I know Fresno didn't score off the return for the stopping them there, but it's like, if you're going to run a play, everybody in the stadium knew it was a QB sneak. Everybody with the with your formation. So it's like, come on, you got to, if you're going to run the play, have a better formation to do it. It's like, that was, or have Cozart in there. Who knows? I guess maybe they thought they'd fake and do something, but it was just a bad play call there, and that two costly things right there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to denigrate Boise's front seven a little too much because, you know, there were more than a few instances where they were able to get pressure on McMarion and force him into kind of bad throws or overthrows or something.
Yeah,
like
there
that.
Are a couple of those.
So, like, the, you know, if you look at the numbers, they're only credited with, you know, two pass breakups and two QB hurries. And oddly enough, just one tackle for loss. So, you know, even though Fresno State wasn't really managing much of anything on the ground, it was more or less kind of one of the things I thought was like, you know, are they going to be able to get a pass rush? And the answer was kind of sort of, because they didn't really stop the running game. They didn't push them backwards. Like, even if they were only getting 1 or 2 yards at a time, they were still moving forwards, which is more or less what Fresno's done all year long. Like, they're not flashy, but they always go forward. And, you know, they didn't really put enough pressure on McMarion to force his hand. You know, they didn't, I mean, they knocked him down a couple times, but, you know, they enabled him to complete enough easy passes, I think, where, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about seemingly every week is like, you know, when are they going to get better on third downs? And if there's one glaring thing that Boise State's going to want to fix for next week, Fresno State 9 of 16 on third downs.
Pretty good.
And especially for McMarion, you know, he completed 7 different, or he was 7-11 on third downs, and he completed and he converted 5. So he moved the chains 5 times through the air, which is, I feel like, as many times as he was able to do that over the last month or something like that. So for me, it was like, finally, like, because it was as bad as he had been, you know, some of that maybe was his fault, some of it wasn't his fault. And it was, to me, like one of those things, it's something's going to give at some point. And that was a huge point in Fresno's favor in this game. And if he can keep it up for one more week, that is one of those things that's really going to put this Boise defense, which played pretty well, I think, all things considered, you know, that's going to put them on their heels, and it's going to put them in a, you know, position where if they're behind again, we still don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball. And then it comes down to Brett Rippon. And if he's going to be able to, you know, create as many big plays as he did, I think that that'll be a point in their favor, because it is worth noting too that, you know, like Ganji, you know, he had 8 plays of more than 15 yards. I believe 5 of them were more than 20. So that's a good thing if you're a Boise State fan. But you might just need a little bit more to flip this game in your favor next weekend.
All right, let's get to next weekend really quick. We'll have our preview show, and we'll do our shows next week about this and any other news that pops up. So Fresno won. Mm-hmm. Head-to-head, right? That's I'm correct on that, 28-17.
Yes.
Yet the title game is going to be at Boise State next week.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who have not been paying attention, if you haven't, shame on you, because you haven't been reading my tweets or articles I've been writing. So,
and you've been missing like really great opportunities to get fired up.
Exactly. And Twitter this morning, if you check our Twitter, MWC Wire, go to our, not tweets, but replies. We're going back and forth. A lot of people chiming in. Myself, Jeremy Moss, and yours as well, Matt K _FS. We're all kind of chiming in on various responses. Here's how it works. And I get the point. Doesn't mean I agree with it, but here's what they're going at. The tiebreaker rule, not tiebreaker, excuse me, not tiebreaker, let me back up. To host a Mountain West title game. The first reason, the first order of business, the first layer is if you're ranked in the college football playoff poll. Mm-hmm. And the reason behind that, which I think we could all understand, is because you want to give that team the best chance to get to a big money bowl game. It's similar if you're a basketball fan. It's why some conferences give teams buys, like all the way, especially smaller leagues, like one big leagues. Like I know the West Coast Conference does it, like SWAC, just a low major. Not that the WCC is, but the WAC, they'll Big West. They'll put teams in the first or second ranked team of the conference from the regular season in the semifinals, which means you got to win basically two games to get the auto bid because your league is typically one and done, one bid. So that's the same theory with this, where say Boise State was ranked, and with UCF, USF, all that stuff is out the window because those teams won, so there's no chance regardless. But had Boise State been ranked, won yesterday, they'd hosting, nobody'd bat an eye, I'd be fine because for me, they beat Fresno State and they're ranked in the playoff. Here's the word that really makes no sense to me. I kind of get if nobody's ranked, but if no team is in the playoff poll, which by the way comes out Tuesday, despite we already know hosting is at Boise next week, is it goes to the old BCS computer formulas. So can you explain to me why that's the case? Because that makes no sense that that's the first kind of tiebreaker situation.
Okay, so I'm going to do this as best as I can. But I think the simplest explanation is that not all wins are created equal. And I've had a lot of discussions with a lot of Fresno State folks around here, especially who are like, you know, both teams were 9-3, both teams were 7-1, Fresno State won it head-to-head. It can't be more complicated than that. And my biggest concern with that is that, you know, they didn't come to those 7-1 figures the same way. You know, it's not a secret to say that the Mountain from 1-6 is better than the West is from 1-6. So, you know, Boise didn't have the luxury of playing San Jose State, of playing Nevada, of playing Hawaii. All three of those teams, I think I looked it up earlier, they finished a combined, 10-27 or something like that?
8 wins overall.
8 wins. So, okay, so Fresno State beat those three teams, right? You know, and Boise, on the other hand, you know, they had to beat Colorado State, bowl team. They had to beat Utah State, bowl team. And they Wyoming? Air Force was the other team that they didn't have, that Fresno didn't play this year.
Oh, sorry, I thought I was going through Boise's schedule. Apologies.
And so, you know, on the whole, you're talking about like two bowl teams versus two teams that want to combine 3 games in the Spartans and the Wolf Pack. And, you know, if you're saying, you know, 7-1 is 7-1 is 7-1, what you're essentially saying is that all wins are created equal. And if that were true, then
UCF, you know, would be number two in the country behind Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and we wouldn't have rankings, and we wouldn't have discussions a month ago where we're wondering why, you know, San Diego State is only moving up 2 spots rather than 3 spots after beating, UNLV or Nevada or whoever they played in the conference opener, things like that. You know, there are these mechanisms that are already in place to judge just how good a win or a loss is. And so to say that past a certain point, you have to remove all of those mechanisms and just focus on one game kind of makes the entire point of playing an entire schedule, an entire conference schedule, pointless. You have to figure out a way to weight how much value a win over San Jose State has versus a win over Colorado State. I don't think anybody's going to argue that beating Colorado State means more than beating San Jose State. And so if you want to focus on just this one game, point at the scoreboard and say, this is all that matters, that doesn't make any sense to me.
I just think the order, you know, is what makes it, because every other conference, anywhere else, head-to-head is usually the first tiebreaker.
But see, that's the thing, though.
Because
here's the argument I made earlier. Okay. Boise came into yesterday 7-0. You know, they're front runners, and like you said, if they'd won, we wouldn't be having this discussion. how much sense would it make to say, you know, you're 7-1, you have one bad week, you've played a clearly tougher conference schedule than the team that just beat you, but you have to look at them and say, sorry, you're SOL because you had one bad week. How much sense does that make? It doesn't.
I hear you. And also, it's big because it's late in the season, and if you lose week 1, week 12, it should carry it equally. How these teams played week 5 or week whatever early on, it may not have discussion, but okay. Maybe I just don't like the computer rankings or whatever you want to say, ratings or rankings, be the tiebreaker. So based on what you're saying, I'm speaking for you, you can tell me yes or no. If not head-to-head, would you rather use, I think, common opponents instead? Strength of schedule or record-wise overall? Because from what you're saying, that would make more sense than even computer ratings as the first tiebreaker to host.
I mean, maybe, but then you'd have to start figuring out, okay, how do you weigh margin of victory?
No, I mean, just like...
Do you even include margin of victory over common opponents?
No, not even that, but just record versus common opponents.
I mean, no. I just think that you have to figure out how to measure the value of different wins, because not all wins are the same. And, you know...
I just don't like that you can't
point to one game and say that this game, you know, head to head matters more than everything else that Boise has done in the past 2 months, because, you know, I've watched Fresno State week in and week out. They're a very good team. Boise's had a much tougher road to yesterday afternoon, and the fact that they lost shouldn't necessarily mean that they are out of luck. Like, there has to be something in place which measures that. And if the computer rankings are flawed in that regard, I mean, let's not forget, you know, Boise lost. They narrowed the gap from, what, 26 teams between them to 4 teams between them?
It ended up being, 25 to 50 before, and then 30 to 34 after.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know that there's a perfect solution to it, but I do know that you can't just point to one game and say this is what matters most, because not all games are created equal.
Yeah, but this one was. That's the thing. This one is. You played each other. That's
not enough, because then you're saying, okay, you can beat up on a weaker division and then, what, beat one good team from the other division and all of a sudden you're hosting?
Well, it almost happened a couple years ago. Remember San Diego State Air Force?
Okay, so that was another point I made too. This is the third year in a row that we've had to deal with these computer rankings. So 2 years ago, for anybody who doesn't remember off the top of their head, San Diego State and Air Force, right? San Diego State ends up having a pretty clear advantage in the computer rankings because they go 8-0 in conference. Air Force only goes 6-2. Aztecs end up hosting. You know, last year, you know, I'm pretty sure we had this exact same conversation, and we heard this similar kind of consternation from San Diego State fans. It wasn't quite the same situation because, you know, Wyoming had beaten San Diego State about a month before the championship game. But, you know, San Diego State basically ran through the West Division last year like a buzzsaw, which, by the way, if you don't remember, the West Division was awful.
Worse.
Last year.
It was worse.
It was way worse last year than it was last year. San Diego State dominated the division to their credit. They ended up going 6-2 because they lost interdivision games with New Mexico and Colorado State. Meanwhile, Wyoming not only beats a ranked San Diego State, they beat a ranked Boise. They beat a 10-win Air Force team. They beat a 9-win New Mexico team to get to the top of the division. And the computer rankings saw that. They saw that that Wyoming just had better wins and gave them the home field advantage for the championship game. And that's despite the fact that San Diego State went into championship weekend with one more win overall. If I'm not mistaken, Wyoming was what? 8-5 going into championship weekend?
Yeah, 8-5.
They were 8-4.
8-4, yeah, because they lost the bowl game, yeah.
And San Diego State was 9-3.
Yeah.
They ended up with the same conference record, 6-2. But it wasn't just that Wyoming beat San Diego State head-to-head. It's just they had more and better wins in conference. And the computer rankings reflect that. And I think that, you know, if you take a step back and you look at the entirety of what Fresno State was able to do this year, and you look at the entirety of what Boise State was able to do this year, beating Colorado State, beating Utah State, those are bigger deals than beating San Jose State and Hawaii and Nevada. And if it doesn't make a lot of sense now, it's because of the optics. You know, if you flipped Boise State and San Diego State on the schedule, I don't think we'd be having this conversation.
Or if they played like in week 8.
Yeah.
We might. We'd probably look back at it, but I don't know. It does look bad because your team won. Or not your team, but the Fresno team won. And then you got to go on the road because you just beat them. And you won. Whatever. Okay, but
long story short. Too long, didn't listen.
Thank you for still with us.
I think this is an unusual set of circumstances that's not likely to repeat itself anytime soon. And I think that the conference would do itself a disservice if it overreacted. And I'll just leave it at that.
So what? Okay. Well, we could probably discuss this next show, but there's whatever. What do you think the right answer is? Is this the right situation, the right way to handle this? Like the right order of tiebreaker scenarios to host?
Yeah, because you can't put too much value on one game. You have to look at the entire schedule. And you have to take into fact, you have to take into account somehow that at least in the last handful of years, one division's been tougher than the other. Mm-hmm. And that means that, you know, some wins are just better than others. And if you're going to figure out how to determine home field advantage when push comes to shove, that has to matter somehow.
I guess unless you play every team once, which isn't possible unless you're the Big 12.
And I mean, besides, if Fresno State goes up and beats Boise next weekend in the championship game, it's probably better for them to move up in the rankings in the AP standings than it would be if they were hosting at home and they beat Boise again. So, I mean, there's upside there. And, you know, it may suck now to not be able to host, but, you know, tell Nevada and San Jose State and Hawaii to get better. And then we won't have this conversation.
So real quick, game starts next week. We'll get to the full preview and everything, but are you surprised Boise is a 10-point home favorite?
Oh my god. Yes.
10 points? Are you kidding me?
It has moved to 9.5.
Depends where you look. I've seen as low as 8 or 8.5 over at Mirage MGM, but still it's like I could see 5 at most, but you lost last week.
I would absolutely take the points at this point.
Yeah, if you're a Fresno fan and you can go to somewhere legally to wager, take your team to cover.
If you're a fan of making money,
yeah,
anywhere you are.
I'm tempted. I am tempted to make a 80-minute drive and put, what, $40 to cover? What would that give me? What would I win if I put $40 on this game to cover?
Oh, I have no idea.
It's -110, so it's what I wouldn't make much on it, but
it's like $50.
Is it worth it to drive out there again? If I'm going to do that, I'll put a parlay for these title games. But
it's like you got to think about gas there.
I know, 80 miles, man. Yeah, it's true, but that line's ridiculous. So let's move on to the next game. We'll recap the season, our final week of the season. Plus, we'll get to all the other lovely next week stuff. Game, sorry, next all game. Right. Where are we going? Utah State, Air Force, or where do you want? San Jose State. Oh boy. Well, congrats to Spartans first of all, right? We got to give them a big round of applause.
Yeah, it's true. I'll clap for them a little bit.
Thank you. I'm trying to pull up my tab here because I have too many tabs and clicked away. San Jose State 20. Wyoming 17. Senior night, first FBS win for the Spartans on the year. Oh, boy. Hey, you know what's a good positive for Wyoming? They found a running game in week 13.
Yeah, better late than never, right?
But playing Spartans who have a terrible rush defense. 139 for Kevin Overstreet, or excuse me, Kellen Overstreet. This is like San Jose State's bad. Is Josh Allen that important to this team?
Did you see Nick Smith playing this game?
I did. 2 picks. QBR 13.3. Him and Montel Aaron did not play well. But yeah, Nick Smith didn't do anything special. He did have a rushing touchdown and a passing touchdown. But he, outside of throwing a couple good passes to CJ Johnson, he was awful. And did guys like Andre, who did a, not Chautry, but who is it? Monroe. 2 picks. 2 picks off of Nick Smith. Terrible.
Yeah, I mean, through 3 quarters especially, like, let's not sugarcoat it. This was kind of an ugly game all around.
Yeah.
You know, Kellen Overstreet had a nice game. You know, Montel Aaron, you know, he did have a couple of nice plays. And, you know, Trey Hartley, to his credit, went over 100 yards. But, you know, again, through 3 quarters, you know, it was more or less the same story that we saw when Wyoming played Fresno State. That, you know, Nick Smith was just like ugly all around. And through three quarters, yeah, he had the two interceptions. He was only 8 of 21 through three quarters.
Really?
And, you know, a lot of the numbers were, again, they were trying to rally late. And, you know, to his credit, you know, maybe he did rebound a little bit. He was 9 of 16 in the fourth quarter. Nearly brought them back a little bit. But, I mean, to answer your original question, yeah, I think this team desperately misses Josh Allen.
Let me give you two telling stats of this game. Okay. Honestly, neither team probably deserved to win. But... third down efficiency. San Jose State, a whopping 2 of 15.
Yeah.
Wyoming, 5 of 20. That tells me two things. You were terrible on third down conversions, but you're also terrible on probably first and second down. You have 20 third down attempts.
Mm-hmm.
That's telling there. And like Wyoming's defense, how do they give up 20 points to San Jose State? That's part of it too. It's like, don't just blame the offense, but this defense for Wyoming is really, really good. You have one thing that doesn't look good is Wingard leads your team in tackles in the game. You don't want a defensive back leading your team in total tackles. But again, looking at what San Jose State scores here, I'm trying to pull them up as I'm chatting, but they don't score that many points. They scored like 22 versus USF, 0, 16, 10, 13. This was the most points they scored since their Hawaii loss at 16, I guess in the BYU loss at 20. They haven't scored this many points. This is the third time all year they cracked 20 points outside of playing Cal Poly.
Well, I mean, and you can't really even say that they had a field position advantage either, because on the whole, you know, they were fairly even all throughout the game. Like what happened with Wyoming was that they had a big advantage on field position in the first half, where they were starting on average at their own 38, but they weren't really doing much with it. You know, I'm trying to look at what they were doing in the first couple of halves, and they only had like the one touchdown drive of 23 yards in the first half, and then the two interceptions that Nick Smith threw. And then what happened after halftime is they ended up having a little bit of a disadvantage, where by the time they started putting more long drives together, you know, they were having longer to go in order to make something of it. And when you look at what San Jose State was able to do, their longest drive was only 43 yards. It was 50 yards.
Second half?
And it was, yeah. But their longest drive in the first half was only 43 yards. So it wasn't like they were lighting the world on fire. They were doing just enough.
I applaud you.
To get themselves into scoring range. And to their credit, you know, Bryce Crawford had, you know, a couple of really long and pretty solid field goals, and he almost had a 55-yarder mm-hmm. that came just short too. So, you know, they leaned on their strength on special teams, and it ended up coming through for him. You know, because he had a 44-yarder and a 52-yarder, and he just missed a 55-yarder.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, you know, Wyoming, one of their biggest missed opportunities was the 49-yarder that Cooper Roth missed because it bounced off the crossbar.
It did.
I believe it was early in the fourth quarter. So it's those little things that just kind of made a difference for the Spartans in this game.
Well, it was also Spartans fumbled on that first half drive.
Mm-hmm.
They're about midfield, so not guaranteed one more score, but three plays later, interception. That led to a touchdown.
Yeah.
So here's what I want. If you watch this game, I applaud you. You would like to know why?
Wise ass.
End of the half, third quarter, field goal. Putt, 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 putt. Miss field goal. Putt, putt. Turnover on downs. How can you watch that game?
You really want to pay props to San Jose State seniors.
Or did you have money in the over-under?
I did not, no.
I'm just saying. But, like, it's not just punt a million punts, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 three and outs by both teams in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So this game's over. Spartans, congratulations for them to get a win. They have a few pieces going forward. Like I said, we'll get to all the offseason stuff later. Like Aaron Nevins should be back, I believe. Is he back next year? Yes, freshman.
Oh, yeah, he's a freshman.
I was thinking of something else. But so you got those guys. They should improve next year. Frank Ginda, we'll see. He's a junior. Frank Ginda, watch, 10 tackles. What did he end the season with? I didn't have that in front of me.
I believe he ended with 173 tackles.
Short of the was it the alt NCAA record like 190?
Oh yeah, the all time record is somewhat absurd, but he did pad his single season conference record. Mm-hmm. So kudos to him for that.
Yeah, 13.31 leads the nation with because all stats count now: playoff, bowl games, title games.
Yeah, yeah.
So he did play 13 games, so that helps because they had the Hawaii exemption. So they had that. Next guy's from Buffalo. Buffalo's going to the bowl game, right?
Yes, they are.
So his yards per, tackles per game could be at risk from him. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes in a couple weeks. And he could be back next year, possibly. We'll see. But Wyoming, here's the thing. Like, they really need Josh Allen back. They're going to a bowl game. The best bet for them, because looking up, we're going to have one of our Wyoming guys do an article on Josh Allen's injury just because mm-hmm. of, like, the time frame to come back. I know athletes come back maybe sooner than non-athlete folks because you should be in theoretically pretty good shape if you're an athlete, especially quarterback. 6 weeks is a typical AC sprain joint timetable. I couldn't find anything specific on athletes because I've looked up those before. Sometimes you can find, it's maybe a quicker time frame because of access or just how healthy you are. 6 weeks mm-hmm. would put him December 23rd for Josh Allen to return because the injury was December 11th.
Yeah.
So the bowl games you want to look for, we'll have a guy do more in-depth breakdown, but the Arizona Bowl and what's the other bowl? Arizona Bowl and the Idaho Potato Bowl. Is that the one that's in December as well? Shoot.
Well, I mean, they're all in December.
No, I mean late December, right on Christmas, the week after. Shoot.
I always remember that the Hawaii Bowl is on Christmas.
That's it.
Eve.
No, that's the one. Sorry, Hawaii Bowl. Yeah, sorry, those two. Hawaii Bowl and the Arizona Bowl. Arizona Bowl is after Christmas. Hawaii Bowl is right before. So those are the two bowl games you want to root for to have a chance to have Josh Allen back. That's still pushing it because that 6 week time frame typically means, you're healthy, but he hasn't played in forever. He hasn't probably practiced. How much time does Craig Bowl want him to practice before he's game ready? And maybe Josh Allen decides to go to the NFL, which is kind of out of the bag. Craig Bowl kind of mentioned it week ago that's likely the case, and we all kind of assume that's the case. Maybe we'll pull what a few guys did last year. Like, didn't Leonard Fournette not play in his bowl game?
He did not. And then Christian McCaffrey also did.
Yeah,
that.
And there's a guy from Baylor versus Boise State, same thing. That's not, I don't know if that's the same scenario, but there's those guys were healthy, didn't play. Weren't they both healthy last year, I believe? They're just not, they didn't want to risk injury. I think McCaffrey's a little banged up, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's correct.
But I do know, obviously we know Allen is hurt right now, so that's pretty risky if he wants to do that. So would you advise him to play if he's healthy?
I mean, if it's a kind of a dicey situation, I can understand why they might want to hold him off. But, I mean, I think when you consider, like, backroom machinations and everything like that, you know, they want ratings for all these games. So if that's the case, I'm sure that, you know, the bulls that are picking kind of in the middle of the process, you know, New Mexico, Boise, Potato, and Hawaii, they'll all consider that somehow. Mm-hmm. And they might, you know, enable Wyoming to have a few more days to play in the Arizona Bowl instead or something like that. Like, that kind of thing wouldn't surprise me if they end up playing in a later bowl for Josh Allen's benefit, but also for the ratings.
Okay. I'm just curious. It's going to be cut it close, so. And we could tell how well or not how bad they've been playing without him in there. But Nick Smith did play well, last week or week before? He had a pretty good game, I mentioned. But this game is pretty awful, and he should not have had that bad of a game playing against this San Jose State team.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we got two more games here. BYU, Hawaii.
Man.
Is it really just missing John Ursua, and that's the main reason they're losing, or is there something else to this team? Because they lost 30-20 to a BYU team who is like their worst team in 40 years.
Well, I mean, you look at the box score, and if you watch this game, I think, yeah, they need an outside receiver, and, you know, the guys that they had been counting on all year long, again, just didn't really have the impact that you would have expected them to. Like, you know, Ammon Barker had 3 catches, 41 yards, but, you know, Keilani Waliko, who I thought would be the guy who would step up, 3 catches, 7 yards. And, you know, it wasn't really until, you know, the young guys started stepping up and getting a little more playing time down the stretch. And I'm thinking mostly about Kumoku Noah when I say that, because he was the guy who caught the late touchdown to make it 30-20. You know, three catches on four targets, 34 yards and a score. You know, it's a modest stat line, but I think that it's kind of indicative of where this team's going to be headed into the offseason. Because Dylan Colley, again, had a really good game, topped 100 yards, had six catches on seven targets. So he's proven himself to be one reliable target. You know, when they get Ursua back next fall, that's going to be two guys that they're going to be able to lean upon. But, I mean, you look around the rest of the stat sheet, St. Juste had his worst game of the year.
Ugly.
12 carries, 39 yards. He did manage to become the all-time single-season rushing king for the Warriors. So, you know, congratulations to him for that. But, I mean, yeah, this is the kind of situation where, you know, this team, you know, they found a way to be reliant, but also to make it work on one guy when throwing it. And then, you know, kind of down the stretch, especially in this game, they made it work a little bit, relying on one guy through the air. But, you know, one of the biggest questions for 2018 is, who's that number two guy going to be? Or once Ursua comes back, who's that number three guy going to be?
Mm-hmm. We'll see. But I think part of this game was sort of like the UNLV game. Running game, Squally Canada had another big game. He had that 40-yard touchdown run. He had two touchdowns, 113 yards. Again, very few carries. Austin Kefentis, back quarterback, had everybody ran the ball. Riley Byrd, who's barely played running back for BYU, ran all over this team. There was that defensive touchdown, and did you see the player that giant defensive lineman just bulldozed and knocked down that pass late in the game?
Yeah, it did.
He just pushed him around and heads up, and boom. They had the scoop and score, or I don't know, it was technically a fumble, but it didn't hit the ground. They got returned 40-plus yards. But, like, really quick, back to Canada, his two games over 100 yards, his three, this is crazy, not including Portland State, his four best rushing yard games are all against Mountain West teams. 213 UNLV, 113 Hawaii, 84 Fresno, 69 Utah State. And so, that's kind of interesting. But, like, this Hawaii team couldn't run the ball, or couldn't stop the run, and couldn't run the ball. It's not like Joe Critchlow threw the ball well, only 166 yards, barely over 50%. Matt Bushman only had two catches. This is where all running game in Hawaii's offense was not great. It's like, the defense let them down. BYU scoring 30 points, his BYU team is terrible.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, what can you say? Like, it was basically the running game, third down conversions, 3 of 11. Penalties were not great, 6 for 55. That's kind of okay for what Hawaii's done all year. But time possession, BYU, 1.9 yards per carry on the ground. This is a game where BYU just pushed Hawaii around, and it's kind of surprising to see for how many injuries BYU's had. They've had way more than Hawaii's had this year. They had, what, 5 TFLs, couple sacks. They were just all over the place, and offense and defense, Hawaii really had nothing to go for them, for themselves, outside of a couple plays.
Well, I mean, I think one thing you could maybe be encouraged by if you're thinking ahead to next year, they did create opportunities for themselves, which is not something you've seen week in and week out from this defense. Like, they did have, you know, they did force two fumbles, and they did recover both of them, including the kind of heads-up play from Solomon Matautia, who, you know, I believe it was Jelani Tavai who hit Critchlow. And it looked like it was credited as a fumble recovery for a touchdown, but it looked like an interception, which was kind of odd to watch, but, you know, you didn't see a lot of that from this defense this year. So I think you could be a little bit encouraged by the fact that the front seven, especially the linebackers, were able to create plays for themselves. You know, Jelani Tavai, you know, before we let him go, you know, he did lead the team 13 tackles. He did have a sack, which was the one that set up the touchdown. So that's, you know, he had a pretty good game. You know, Matautua ended up with 10 tackles of his own. So, you know, I think that's one thing you can lean on, but yeah, they're gonna have to solve their defensive line issues going forward somehow, because, you know, when you're getting beat up by a BYU team that hasn't really been able to run the ball very consistently all year long, and you're giving up five yards a carry to that team,
it gets a bad rushing team as well.
Yeah, that's probably like problem number one that Nick Rolovich and company are going to have to solve this offseason.
All right, well, let's move on to the final game, Utah State Air Force. Luckily for Utah State, we mentioned UNLV is not bowl eligible. Utah State's sort of lucky because they're 6-6 now after the loss, 38-35. This might have been the game of the weekend. It was a really good game.
I thought it was.
It was a sneaky good game if you stayed up late to watch it, like I did, kind of late. That's why Thank you for pointing out my miscue in the bowl projections I was during that game. I was typing it up. But Utah State, 6-6. They're going to the bowl game because there's exactly 78 bowl eligible teams. One caveat where Air Force could go to a bowl game, because maybe UCLA doesn't want to go to a bowl game because they have new head coach and everything. They're 6-6, right?
I believe so, yes.
I should double check that real quick. But Air Force has the top RPI, or not RPI, geez, APR, excuse me, that's a basketball term. But UCLA, if they're sitting at a, they are 6-6, they could decline a bowl game just because they have Chip Kelly now in tow. Maybe they don't want to go to bowl games because interim coach and all that. We'll see. So there's a small chance Air Force could go to a bowl game if they decline, which honestly could be, I haven't heard anything about it, but we've seen teams decline with a new coach coming in. So there's that. Yeah. But actually, the game itself, whew, a lot of points in the first quarter. If you stay up to watch the fourth quarter, you're in lucky luck for some good football.
Oh, yeah, of course.
In this game, we mentioned, because it was kind of a thrown upon us as we're doing our pregame research for our last show, or sort of. This kind of sprung upon us. We didn't really look into it, but we found out Isaiah Sanders starting due to injury. This guy has, he ran. I complained about Arian Werthen running the ball too many times. Matt, how many carries did Isaiah Sanders have in this victory?
Isaiah Sanders had 44 carries in this victory for 196 yards 44. And three touchdowns. By the way, I looked up on Sports Reference the list of running backs, or the list of ball carriers, rather, who have had 44 carries in a game since 2000. Really interesting list.
What do you got? Who?
Okay, so
what'd you notice, I should say?
And this is just since 2000, so there might have been guys before that aren't included on this list. At the top of the list, Michael Turner, when he was at Northern Illinois, 52 carries in a win over Central Michigan back in 2000.
Side note, had his own hot sauce there in Northern Illinois.
I did not know that.
Yes, and my team of choice on our RIP NCAA football, but EA Sports NCAA football, I played NIU quite a bit with him on my team.
But yeah, I mean, you go down the list. Dante Foreman from Texas is on there in last year's loss to Kansas.
Oh, Jesus.
LaDainian Tomlinson's on this list. Kadeem Carey at Arizona's on this list. Makes Larry sense, yeah. Ned, blast from the past from San Diego State, is on this list. Chance Kretschmer, former Nevada running back, 2001, had 45 carries. So, I mean, there's a really interesting list. That, you know, Matt Forte's on there. Le'Veon Bell's on there. If you're thinking about NFL stars, really cool list to see.
You know what's interesting? Outside of, I guess, maybe the Nevada player, how many teams run the triple option on there? None.
Right? Actually, yeah.
Or at least who you mentioned. Outside of, depends where I think of the pistol, but none of them really run. I know a run-based attack, but that's different than what Air Force, Georgia Tech, Navy, Army do, or Nebraska used to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily see the number of carries concentrated quite like you saw yesterday.
Yeah, it makes sense, too. So usually spread out. You could have maybe three guys with 20-plus carries, four guys with 10.
But then, you know, you look at what Sanders was able to do on the ground, and, like, he didn't necessarily blow anybody away, but, you know, he was kind of nickel and diming them to death. Like, if you look at the number of running chunk plays that they had, you know, they had 13 on the game, but, like, if you go down the list, it's like Isaiah Sanders, 10 yards. Isaiah Sanders, 10 yards. Isaiah Sanders, 10 yards. Isaiah Sanders, 11 yards. 10
His
yards.
Long. 12. His long was 11.
Yeah, so, like, he wasn't necessarily breaking out and getting, like, huge chunks of yardage, but, like, he was killing Air Force on the ground. I mean,
would not move his feet. His feet would not stop. Like, see that first down where he spun around, tripped over to the guy trying to tackle him, leans over, backspins three times, it seems like, stretches for, like, makes it by 1 yard or 1 inch. Like, his feet would not stop moving.
Yeah. It seemed like every time the Air Force had, like, a third and short that they would find a way to convert it. And, you know, it was really weird because one of the things we've talked about a lot with this Utah State team is, like, you know, which offense is going to show up? And, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that Utah State's offense had one of its best performances of the year. Like we've talked about, they can beat vulnerable defenses, and they owned Air Force in that. Like, they averaged nearly 9 yards play, you know, by winning on the ground. Gerald Bright had over 100 yards. Aaron Vaughns had 2 carries. One of them was a 71-yard touchdown. Jordan Love was 17 of 30, 284 yards. So they were winning on offense.
Mm-hmm. But and those two touchdowns to Moncrief and Tarver, those were sick, man. Both the exact same play right at the pylon there.
But then you start looking at other numbers, like the disparity in the number of plays ran.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. Utah State only ran 59 plays, which, you know, a lot of that is a product of how much success they were having. Air Force ran 94 plays. And they dominated on time of possession in a way that we haven't often talked about this year. Like, the Utah State only had the ball for 22 minutes. Air Force had it for nearly 38. And because, you know, they were 11 of 20 on third downs. So for as explosive as Utah State was, the defense wasn't doing nearly enough to slow down how efficient Air Force was being. And all credit falls to the quarterback, who in his first career start basically put the team on his shoulders and led him to a win.
I thought this game, yeah, he did a very good job. And I'll talk about the defensive play here in a second. But here's the turning point in the game. Air Force, 16 plays, nearly 7-minute drive. They're up three. They're driving. They go down, third and goal at the one. Don't get it. Fourth and goal at the one. Okay, you're down. You're up three. What are you gonna do? A kick and field goal. Okay, 6 points. It really does nothing for you if you think about it. This is the end of the right and start of the fourth quarter. End of the third quarter. Mm-hmm. They get stuffed. Fourth and goal at the one. Utah State six. They just drove like nothing. Six plays, 99 yards. The first pass play.
Yep.
Jordan Love makes an excellent pass play to Scarver. There's 46 yarder. Then they go a couple. Then Ron Tarver has that 25 yarder. Then one of the touchdowns I mentioned. If you haven't checked our highlight on our website, we put a bunch of highlights out there. Check out both those Tarver touchdowns. Okay, they're at 28-24. Air Force punts the ball after three plays, gaining 1 yard. You figured, okay, game's over. They're up four. They got the ball, 6 minutes left in the game, something like that. 11 minutes left in the game. Much more time, I thought. They're sitting at third and three. Okay. Fumble recovery in the end zone. Strip sack, score. Air Force gets it. That's basically game over. But wait, there's more.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, that's the game. The game. No. It's like, give credit. Like, Utah, both teams, like, look how, like, there's big discrepancies. Fourth and one, the goal. You don't get it. Yeah. Aggies, 99 yards touchdown. Okay, whatever. They forced the punt. All right, we got this. Utah State. We run the ball. We get up. We've seen what we can do. Look at last time we're down deeper in territory. We'll get a field goal at least. No. They defensive score. Utah State comes back. Who cares? We'll score again. They go down, driving down again. Tarver with that second touchdown pass. All right. Now, just only 5 minutes left. Air Force takes a lengthy drive, 13-play drive. Pretty efficient, though, almost 4 minutes. Scores a touchdown. And it was a Sanders TD. And it's like, geez. And then Utah State couldn't get anything done. End of the game, midfield. But, like, those last 10, you think the, this is comparable. Like, did you watch UCF USF on Friday? Did you see the end of that game?
I saw some of it. Yeah, I did not see the end.
I saw the final 10 minutes. This game mimics that in excitement for how many touchdowns and scores there were. USF UCF game, couple blown coverages, kick return for a touchdown to get UCF victory eventually. But this game had the same amount of points or same kind of style of finishing this game, and neither team gave up, and both teams responded when they were down big time.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up being Air Force just came out on top. And that's all I got. I don't know. Kind of dramatic at the end. Like I said, last 10 minutes, you should have watched, folks.
You should have.
You missed out. Late night football. So is Sanders going to be the guy next year going forward, perhaps?
Well, I mean, I figure Worthman will be in. I mean, there's got to be at least a competition if Worthman, when Worthman gets healthy. We know Nate Roman is graduating one way or the other.
Yeah.
But, you know, couldn't hurt to have a viable backup to know that things will be all right if your number one guy goes down.
Okay. All right. Do we have anything else to add? Because this show has gone quite a bit long. Lengthy. We had a long San Diego State. Well, we did talk about San Diego State, Stanford, but Fresno, Boise. Any parting shots before we get to our preview next week about the Mountain West Championship game? Regular season, unfortunately, has come to an end.
Shout out to everybody who has made this week our best week yet over at the website.
Heck yeah. You know who you are. I'd shout out some names, but I just have ones and zeros.
And if that's not you, what are you doing?
If you listen to the show, if you listen to us at other locations before, join us over here. We know what we're doing. Actually, today right now, I know we're sort of new just because of our new Webb home. But today, right now, Sunday night is our best page view by far. Yesterday, Saturday night, was our previous high in page views. So we've been doing quite well. So again, like Matt said, thank you for listening. Thank you for reading. If you're not, if you're just listening, at least click on the articles, folks. Come on, we got some good stuff out there. We got baseball. We got basketball going on right now. We're going to blow out the coverage, blow out the budget for Mountain West title game coverage next week.
Word.
So give us a watch. Give us a read. Give us a listen. If you like this at our other location, they're doing nothing now. Stick with us. We know what we're doing.
Yes, we do.
Is that a nice subtweet? Sub-podcast tweet?
Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
I already subtweeted on our web on the website as well, or on Twitter. So you know who we are. Matt Kennerly, Jeremy Moss. We talk Mountain West. We got everybody. So hey, check out our site, MW Wire, Facebook, Twitter, all that same stuff. Podcast. We're on Spreaker now. So if you like Spreaker, check them out. It's kind of like SoundCloud, but we're not on SoundCloud. So go to Spreaker if you have an Android app, because Blog Talk Radio does not have an app, but a great player now that's improved. So Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast, thank you for listening. And as always, we'll be back next time, and we're biased to get your team, folks.